With a day or less to go, we continue our look at Tuesday's American presidential election. Joining me on the line now is Dr. Richard Fogelsong, a professor of political science at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. We'll discuss the campaign and the election to come with the professor, who is also the author of Married to the Mouse, Walt Disney World in Orlando, Yale University Press 2003. Welcome to the commentary.ca, Dr. Richard Fogelsong. Good afternoon, Professor Fogelsong.
Thank you, Joseph. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you for joining us. I was watching CNN over the weekend, and they were talking about this idea of the registration going up. Does that mean that turnout will be high tomorrow?
Oh, yes. I think turnout is going to be very high here by Florida standards. There's an anticipation that we might have an extra 2 million voters voting in this election.
And what do you think motivates, is it just good groundwork by the parties, or is that because they don't like the incumbent?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with people's responses to the Bush administration. I think people are by anti-Bush sentiment, but also by very strong pro-Bush sentiment. I would add to that third-party organizations have been very active in the state, registering new voters and mobilizing voters for this election.
I was reading, you were quoted in a story, I believe this was, I can't remember which newspaper this was, you were talking about the Rose Garden strategy that was attributed to you, and that's regarding the power of incumbency, and during the hurricane season, President Bush was campaigning hard in your state. Obviously, he has an advantage over his opponent, does he not?
Well, he does. Any incumbent president has a certain advantage. He has the ability to bestow favors and appointments and public works projects on a state. In addition, during the hurricane season here, when we had three hurricanes hitting the state, I think the president was able to appear in the state in a statesman-like way, not in a political way, and provide aid through FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Association. Meanwhile, his opponent, Senator Kerry, really had to suspend campaigning, so there was an advantage for President Bush. However, that's been so long ago now, a month ago, that I think that the benefit that President Bush got from the hurricanes and the opportunity to appear as a statesman to the state probably has diminished with the passage of time.
What fascinates us up here in Canada is the closeness of the race. Are there stark differences between President Bush and Senator Kerry that make it interesting that this race is actually so close?
Well, yes, this election is in many ways a referendum on Iraq, at least a after-the-fact referendum. That's kind of interesting. They have stated Senator Kerry has stated that he would not have taken us into the war in Iraq. There may be less difference between them about how they would proceed with the situation in Iraq. Senator Kerry has said that he would remove troops within 4 years and that he would start removing them within, I think, 6 months. So that is a difference. But there's a perception that they have a very different stance with respect to foreign policy, the war on terrorism, and the war in Iraq. I think that Florida is so important because Florida is a bellwether of the nation. So it's not something special about Florida that makes this election closely watched here and so close. It's that we are a mirror of the country as a whole.
Florida alongside with Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri?
Well, yes, we have some competition here in Florida this election as the crucial state.
The latest poll here that I have is for Florida. It's 48 for Kerry, 47 for Bush, and that's from Zogby. Do you think that that's the way the vote will come down tomorrow night, or is this poll just not reliable?
Well, the problem with all of the polls is that they underrepresent the new registrants. That's the mystery about this election. There are 1 million new registrants here in the state, 270,000 new Republican registrants, 260,000 new Democratic registrants, and about 500,000 new independents. And it's particularly those independent new registrants that are the mystery voters who may well determine the election.
will people like you and I who observe politics, will we be up Tuesday night all night long, or will this be over quickly enough?
Well, I may not be able to follow my own advice, but mine would be to go to bed at a reasonable hour on Tuesday night and save your strength for Wednesday morning to find out sometime on Wednesday who appears to be winning.
We won't have a Florida a recount again like we did in 2000, will we? Or?
Well, I think we'll have a good sense of how the votes are heading in Florida. But as everyone who's watching the election knows, both political parties have teams of attorneys in the key battleground states who are poised to offer objections in cases where voters are challenged. And so there will be literally thousands of challenges, I think. And those challenges will occur during the day. The Republicans and Democrats will both issue challenges before they know the outcome of the voting. Now, if it's lopsided, I assume that on the winner's side, the challenges would be withdrawn. But it'll take a while, I think, to investigate all the challenges that might be made. The Supreme Court really did open up Pandora's box in the Bush v. Gore decision in 2000 when they applied the Equal Rights Doctrine from the 14th Amendment and said that practices for counting and recounting could not vary significantly from one county to another within a state. There always has been a variation. Now it becomes a legal matter, and when you give new rights, you get new claims against those rights. So it's going to be a messy and complicated situation on Tuesday, and especially on Wednesday, I fear.
If you were analyzing the campaigns, how do you think Senator Kerry has done in running his campaign? Do you think he's been able to get the president on these critical issues, or has the president been artful in dodging the questions about Iraq, about the economy?
Well, here in Florida, as in the other battleground states, I suspect, television viewers have been bombarded with TV commercials, and people are really tired of TV commercials. However way they're disposed to vote, people wish the commercials would end, and I think many, many television viewers reach for the remote control and the mute button, especially when they're watching the evening news in the primetime period when you may get 3, 4, 5 commercials in a row, maybe multiple ones on each side for President Bush and for Senator Kerry. I think what Senator Kerry has done well in his TV advertising is to be able to respond to new situations as they arise. He has a standard format TV commercial where he appears with a flag in the background looking presidential, saying that if I'm elected, I will, and then he makes his case. And meanwhile, you see pictures and text on the screen that supports his presidency or his campaign and criticizes President Bush. And there's a series of these. They all have a similar look about them, but they have slightly different content. And it appears that the campaign is able to produce those pretty quickly. And should he win, I think that might be one of the keys to his success. But the Republicans have been equally hard-hitting in their commercials. I think one good thing about the campaign is that while an excessive amount of money has been raised, there's some rough parity in the fundraising and in the TV commercials, so that I don't think that if John Kerry loses, he would be able to say that he lost only because he was not able to beam as many TV commercials to potential voters as the other side was.
Now those TV commercials, I mean, I've seen them when we, you know, watch American television. Do they actually have an effect on undecideds? I mean, I find it hard to believe that there are people out there at this point who are undecided, and I find it also hard to believe that they would see a commercial either from either side and say, well, that makes a good point, I'm going to vote for them on Tuesday.
Well, you're right about that. The purpose of the commercials is, one, to reassure and mobilize your base of voters, the people who are strongly predisposed to vote for you, to make sure that those people appreciate the importance of the election campaign and do, in fact, go out to vote. And then, as well, the purpose is to sway voters, and that means to sway the undecideds who are straddling the fence. All of the public opinion polls indicate some swing voters, some undecideds, but you know, now it's getting down to 3-5% or so. So there aren't many of those swing voters left out there. But, and it's hard to imagine what events would sway voters here at this late stage in the campaign. The Osama bin Laden tape is an interesting example. That is surely something politically relevant, but a lot of the analysis, and I think some polls indicate as well that it's apt to have a negligible effect, if only because people have already made up their mind. And having made up their mind, you can interpret that tape and the continuing menace of Osama bin Laden either way as an example of a clear and present danger in support of President Bush's war on terrorism, or, contrarily, as an example of a continuing menace that he failed to remove, and therefore in support of Senator Kerry.
The idea that Senator Kerry was a flip-flopper, that he's weak, is something that the Republicans and Karl Rove, you know, really put out there from the primary season on. Do you think he's been able to get over that and been able to properly talk about his plans, his issues, rather than deal with questions about Swift votes and about being selling his foreign policy off to France or something like that?
Well, I think my answer is no. I think that Senator Kerry has been hobbled in his campaign by the effectiveness of the opposition campaign, targeting him, targeting his record, and interestingly, targeting his strength. His strength was supposed to be that he was someone who had military service, he was a hero, but the public opinion polls seem to indicate that people have some question about whether Senator Kerry could be trusted in office, whether he would be decisive, whether he would be vigorous in prosecuting the war on terrorism. You know, in every campaign, every election, I should say, there's really two referenda, the first about whether to fire the incumbent leader, and the second about whether the opposition is a better choice. Their public opinion polls indicate that a lot of Americans think that the country is not on the right track, hence they're potentially willing to fire the incumbent president, but many have reservations about Senator Kerry and whether he would in fact be a better replacement.
Well, both sides know that the vote will be close on Tuesday, but they're hoping, either side, that the result will be decisive enough that the country can move on. What do you think will happen on Tuesday night? Will we have a decisive victory? And by that I mean perhaps anywhere from 4 to 5 to 6 points.
I do not think that we will have a decisive victory that will provide a clear mandate for the winner. I hope that we do, because I fear for the crisis that might ensue. I think that the next president will have limited credibility, a small mandate on the basis of which to govern. I think, too, that especially if President Bush wins and if his victory is clouded in some kind of sense of scandal about the way the election was won, that there's a much greater potential for unrest than in 2000, in part because it is after 2000 and some feel that the vote was stolen then. Whether it was or not, that perception is widespread, and it's widespread in the minority community. The New York Times today has an article showing a poll result that 70% of African Americans, if I recall correctly, think that there will be shenanigans in the counting of the ballots. So if you already have that kind of anticipation, there's a greater probability that people will interpret any problems in that light, and that as a result we are going to see some problems, the possibility of social unrest. I hope that does not occur. I think it's a plausible scenario, however.
I've also heard that, you know, as you said, that the violence is a possibility should the results be contested. What are the other scenarios that could happen Tuesday night? Is the possibility that the electoral vote could be tied at 269, or will we? I mean, is anything possible Tuesday night? Will I be surprised Wednesday morning?
Yeah, I think we shouldn't be surprised by anything. It is possible there will be a tie. that the election could go into the House of Representatives. If that happened, then the Republicans, President Bush, prevails because of the votes in the House of Representatives. Americans will get a history lesson once again about the way the Electoral College works, and those of us who think we understand the Electoral College will be, I think, in much demand in the media to try to explain those scenarios, in which case the expert resources of the nation, I think, will be sorely strained. I think we should prepare for all possibilities for Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday of this week.
We talked about, you mentioned violence and social unrest earlier. Why do you think it is, and how do you explain this to someone outside of your country? I hate to use the John Edwards' term, two Americas, but there are, you know, on the great issues of the day, whether it be abortion, gay marriage, or the war in Iraq, there are, you know, the country is so polarized. How do you explain that to someone who thinks that, you know, America generally is a homogeneous country? I guess it is not.
Well, it is not a homogeneous country on the social issues of the day, nor is it homogeneous on the issue of the war. If the main issue in this election was the state of the economy, then I think there would be much less likelihood of negative reaction, of social unrest, of challenged legitimacy for the victor in the Electoral College. But foreign policy and war and issues like gay marriage are obviously moral issues, and because of that moral dimension, it's easier to dislike your foe, to have the case, the viewpoint that the people on the other side are morally wrong in their support for the opposing candidate. And it's that moral dimension to conflict that makes it more vituperative and acerbic and creates the greater possibility for unrest than simply thinking that the people with a different economic interest have prevailed.
The bitterness towards Bush is something that I've heard not as prominent since, I guess, Nixon in 68 or in that era there. Why do you think people just literally hate Bush so much?
Well, it's interesting. They did not, I think, hate him at the beginning of his administration, nor in the aftermath of 9/11. I think it's been because of the events in the so-called war on terror and also in the war in Iraq, the perceived misrepresentation that has occurred about the hunt for weapons of mass destruction, about whether our allies have been behind us in this war in Iraq. That has galvanized the opposition and given them a sense that the country is being ill-governed and that manipulation has occurred in this administration, manipulation of public opinion and a failure to tell the truth. And I think that combined with a sense that the president is not always a good communicator, the concern about the competency of his administration have all congealed in the form of an extreme dislike. Of course, that's matched by a strong faith in the president on the other side.
Yeah, that's one of the surprising things that I've seen observing this, is that Bush does, you know, Bush has, as you said, this is a great dislike for Bush, and then on the other side, there's this great like for him. And I guess for some people that's a little, I mean, surprising or hard to understand, I guess. You talked about the election going to the House and that possibility. Are there House and congressional races that we should be watching for on Tuesday night that would be of interest?
Well, I think the most important Senate race is in South Dakota. Not because South Dakota is normally considered important, but because that pits the minority leader of the Senate, Tom Daschle, who is the leading Democrat in Washington, against a Republican opponent.
Is he facing a tough challenge there?
Well, it's considered a very close race, and Tom Daschle could well lose that race. In years past, parties have not vigorously challenged the leaders of the opposing party. but over the last 15 years or so, that old practice or accommodation has gone by the way, and now the Republicans have vigorously challenged Tom Daschle. I saw a report over the weekend that the spending in that race has equaled $50 per likely voter.
Really?
In the state of South Dakota. I suspect some voters might have preferred just to line up and get their $50, but be that as it may, it'll be interesting to see whether Senator Tom Daschle prevails. If he does not, it'll, for the Democrats, be the loss of an important leader for them. But symbolically, that'll be a very important victory for Republicans and likewise a loss for the Democrats.
So Wednesday, will we see a change in the leadership in the House? Will we see the Senate probably will remain Democrat. Will remain Republican. Will the House switch?
No, I don't think the House will switch. I don't think anyone anticipates that the Democrats could gain control of the House. There's only a 2-vote margin in the Senate, but it's unlikely that the Democrats could retake control of the Senate. There's a possibility that the Democrats will lose some of the seats that they have now. For example, here in Florida, there is a seat up that was filled by Bob Graham, a Democrat, and it's a very closely contested race, and the Republicans could very well win the seat here in Florida, and all of the things remaining the same throughout the country, that would mean a loss of one seat for the Democrats.
May I ask about the stuff that's going on that we're reading about at Disney with Michael Ovitz?
Yes.
Are you familiar with that? And
I'm following.
Well,
they're
suing. It's the shareholders that are suing Eisner, right? Is that the? Am I getting that correctly? Or
well, they're suing Eisner and the company, saying that he has squandered the resources of the company by the golden parachute that was arranged for Mr. Ovitz at the time that he was fired as president of the company.
So does it? Of course, the Eisner is not looking very good after this, is he?
Well, I don't know what public opinion polls might indicate. I think it's probably been damaging information against Michael Eisner that he did arrange such a lucrative retirement plan for Michael Ovitz, and that he, according to Mr. Ovitz, did not give him much of a chance to ever serve effectively as president of the company.
And Eisner's on his way out, I believe, right? Is that?
Well, he's announced that he'll leave in 2 years, which is a very long goodbye. My own guess is that he'll leave sooner than that.
Okay. All right, Richard, thanks so much for taking the time out to speak with us, and I appreciate your insight, and I'm sure people that visit our site will appreciate your thoughts and your recollections this afternoon.
Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you.
It's good to talk to you.
Thank you. Richard Fogelson, Professor of Political Science at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida, here on the Commentary.com.